Welcome to my journeys and my stories around the old county of Gwent. Well, in the last episode, while Rambler was down on the shore, I was taking shelter from some fierce July weather in the cool of the Woodstorecombe Library at the Newport Medieval Ship. And I was chatting to the curator, Toby Jones, and also to the poet Marcel Newbold. And I found that while I've been travelling along the coast, the lilt of poem and lyric and song has permeated this stretch of the journey. Now, there have been quite a few poems written about the Newport ship. Gillian Clarke in particular has written a very fine poem. Now, Marcel Newbold's poem particularly caught my imagination, and it was strange really because it's a winter poem, and so we sat in the sweltering July trying to keep cool in the wood store listening to the magic spell of Marcel's winter poem.
Hello, I'm Marcel Newbold and I'm here with Christine in the library of the Newport ship, and I was fascinated by some of the displays that we're here about the source of timbers. I'm a poet and I write about place and inheritance, and ships are a great kind of fodder for that type of writing from an inheritance point of view as well, that just the timescales that were involved with this medieval ship from when it was first kind of discovered here, but actually from the timbers when they were grown themselves. They were actually grown from compass trees, which means they're grown for their shape right from when they're first planted, specifically planted for this task. And that kind of foresight of kind of looking perhaps generations ahead and of what's needed. I have small children thinking what I would want to provide for the future for them, especially my daughter, what she might need. So this poem was inspired by a visit here and about that foresight that I saw in some of the displays about growing these timbers for kind of future generations. And it was from a call out for a winter poem. And so this is the poem, and it's called Winter Visiting. Your grandma's mum planted her apple here, scrumped from the mayor's garden, juice delicious, splattering trails of delight. She pressed a pip, scragged and eager, thumb deep, next to this thorn-proud rose. They worshipped her, sang and danced, made home. This bough, leaf-free, that holds you now, in your green-stained skirt, she grew for you. She looked to the future, saw your beautiful face, and planted you a boat, a pyre.
We sat on for a good while, talking about the task of seeing what is needed for the future, about the craft of shaping a boat and a poem, about scoping out the shape of the ship in the bend of the bare winter branches. And at last it was time to face the July sun again and venture out. It was time to cross the Esk. Now, one of the best ways to cross the Esk is by air. Yes, in the gondola of the renowned transporter bridge, you will be suspended and transported in moments through the air with the river flowing below. Only at the moment you won't, because the wonder that is the transporter bridge is undergoing a long and thorough renovation. And there's a new visitor centre and all sorts, but the bridge and the gondola are out of bounds for now. The transporter bridge is the southernmost crossing of the river, not far from the sea really, but Newport is frankly spoiled for bridges. And it's one of those mysterious things, when you count them, they're never the same number twice in a row. If you look at the bridges between Caerleon and the transporter bridge and you count around 10, you'll be more or less right. So the next southernmost after the transporter bridge, that's the city bridge, which carries the traffic of the A48 across the river, and we can walk on the footpath on the side of the bridge. There's a part of me that wants to turn here and follow the Esk back to the source, but that'll have to be a journey and a story for another time. Because now I know it's time to head on, and the southernmost tributary of the Esk, the Ebwy, Ebwy in Welsh, joins just before the Esk enters the sea, just below the docks. In fact, it's kind of a double river mouth. They enter the sea talking in unison, or maybe talking over one another. The Ebwy has flowed down through Breconshire, and its name has a possible couple of meanings. Eb in Welsh is an old horse word, like epint, which means horseway. And it's also an old root for say or speak. So the Ebwy or Ebwy may be horse river or speaking river, or maybe both. As I make my way to the coast, I've got a nagging feeling that there's something I've left out. And in fact, there is somewhere I would like to have gone, but I can't. Not really. I did try to go there not so very long ago. I would like to go to a ruined court, to Llys Ifor Hael, the court of Ivar the Generous. Ifor Hael was a patron of poets in the 14th century, but his court and all its glories were in ruins by the 17th century. But there's a well-known poem written in Welsh, a lament for the ruins of the once noble court. It was written in the 18th century by Ieuan Brydydd Hir, which was the bardic name of Evan Evans, and it's hauntingly beautiful. Llys Ifor Hael, gwael i'r gwedd, yn garnau mewn gwerni mae'n gorwedd. Drain ag ysgall mall a'i medd, mieri llyb i mawredd. The Hall of Ivar the Generous. How poor it looks, mounds lying amongst the alders. Thorn and thistles possess it, brambles where once was greatness. And the poem ends by saying how strange it is that pride and joy dwell in houses built on sand. Like many, many other school children, I learnt the poem in school. I thought it must be talking about some exotic, distant place. And it was many, many years before I learnt that actually the court of Ifor Hael was just west of Newport. And then I thought, well, that's amazing. I can go and visit the ruins. But they are unregarded and pretty much inaccessible. You need to go to Clepper Park Industrial Estate and cross the M4. And across not just brambles, but rubble. And really, nothing to see here. It's another degree of forgetting. Today, I don't have the heart to search. Llys Ifor Hael will have to lie in the rhythms of my imagination, where it has since school days. Anyhow, putting aside regrets and places we can't go, it's back to the sea with the Esk and the Ebwy at our backs. And the coast path ahead, forward onto the Wentloog Levels. Now, walking this part of the coastline, there's always a choice, depending on the weather, to walk on the high road along the top of the sea wall and be open to the full, unrelenting force of any wind or rain, or to take the low road on the landward side of the wall with some shelter but no sea view whatsoever. But today there is no question. The weather is warm with only the gentlest of breezes, and stepping up onto the sea wall is like stepping into a perfect day. The sea is sparkling and the sky is blue and enormous. And there's a feeling in my chest now that keeps me walking excitedly ahead, away from the buildings of Uskmouth, the power station, the pylons, and heading towards St. Bride's Wentloog. If you remember from the very first episode, if you were listening in then, I said that the churches dedicated to St Bride in Wales are mostly to be found on the west coast. And one of them is here, on the Levels. And also, we know that this coast is not an ice cream and deck chairs coast, but at St Bride's, there's the nearest thing you could find to a beach. It's a bit gravelly, but in days gone by, this was quite a tourist destination for the holiday crowds, because not only was there a beach, but there was an open-air swimming pool here on the shoreline that would fill and empty with the tides. And jolly parties of people would come out for the day to St Bride's in a horse-drawn charabang from Newport to get the full benefits of the sea air. Well, it's been a long time since St Bride's Wentloog has been viewed as a holiday destination, even for a day trip. But today, up here on the coast path, under the huge blue sky, there's a real sense of joy in my step. It drives me on through Peterstone Great Wharf, where not only is there the sea sparkling, but there are oyster catchers calling, and the finest array of teasels in purple and full of bees that I've ever seen. And walking on towards the Rumney Marshlands, the drumming beat I've been feeling in my bones since I climbed up onto the wall is growing so loud that at last I recognise what it is. Hoofbeats. Yes, I know what this is. I know this story that is telling itself now, on this day, in this moment. The story of the great horse of Rumney Marsh. Because there in the distance, a huge horse's head is rising up from the ground, where it has lain for longer than anyone could possibly remember. Ears, eyes, and flowing mane. A whole sleek body rises with a twitching tail. A great grey mare she is. She is magnificent. She is so big that a tall man could stand upright under her belly. And as she stands looking out to sea, all around the grasses twitch and patches of land shrug and fray, and up from below come the bones of horses. They are Roman horses, cavalry horses, that the legions drained these lands to feed. And in amongst them stocky, shaggy ponies, the pride of the tribe lands in the time of the Silures. Skull and scapula and ankle bone, so long buried and forgotten, find one another again and rearticulate. And one by one, the bone horses from before get to their feet and come to stand beside the great horse. And very soon, living horses of flesh and blood come cantering in to join them, broken free from their ropes, where they have been tethered by the roadside, picking dusty mouthfuls of grass in amongst the litter. And there's a donkey, head held high, and a couple of blood stallions running in from a farm nearby. And then, amongst all the drumming hoofbeats that have been echoing through my bones, comes a charabang, empty of its passengers, but pulled by a hefty cart horse whose mane is hung with shells and ribbons. And perched, holding the reins in holiday spirits, is Rambler. On they come, careering along the seawall, up from the sands of St Bride's, because the call of this skin and bone herd, the call of the great horse of Rumney Marsh, cannot be ignored. And now she gives a single whinnying cry, and the bone horses and the flesh horses straight away begin to follow where she leads, down towards the sea. And into the sea goes the great horse, and within moments she is belly deep. And the herd beside her is swimming now. The hefty cart horse, unhitched from the sharabang, trots down to the water, and she too is swimming, her brightly decorated mane streaming out around her. And then they are all swimming, all of the herd following the lead of the great horse through the sparkling sea towards the horizon. And then the great horse whinnies, lowers her head, and plunges. And with a kick of her hooves and a trick of the light, she is gone beneath the water, and the bone and flesh herd gone with her. Into the salt tide seaward flow, they are dissolved. And Rambler? Rambler is sat quite still beside a clump of teasels. And so I go and sit down with her. And ear to the ground and hand on heart, we both know that the hoofbeats have died away now. And very soon it'll be time to turn away from the shore and to head up, away inland. But you remember the court that we couldn't visit even the ruins of? The court of Ivar Hael. Well, there's a beautiful version of that poem set to music by Lynn Denman with Fanon. And while I was preparing this episode, I heard the news that Lynn had passed away. And so I'm including it now in honour of Lynn Denman and her beautiful, beautiful voice. And to honour the way she brings together in this song all the poignancy and power of the lament, whilst weaving in an upbeat and a rhythm of life continuing, which is a beautiful achievement and a song well sung. Thank you. Thank you for keeping me company on my journeys, and I'll see you again on Down the Track.